XML, JSON, and OpenEdge. My name is Robin Brown. I work for Parata Software. I'm a principal engineer. I've been with Parata for 19 years now, working on the open client XML, ADL, core client development team. So I'm lucky enough to have been able to work on most of the features that I'm going to be able to talk to you today about. So here, there's a little bit we're going to talk about for 11.4, so this is that standard disclaimer, so don't trust us, but we think we're going to ship it anyway. So here is an OpenEdge timeline of what we've done with XML and JSON, you know, through the years. Back in version 9, we did the DOM and the SAX support, XDocument and the SAX reader. In release 10.1a, we added the XML SAX writer. We added XML scheme validation to the DOM and the SAX support. And also in 10.1a, we added the pro data set serialization to and from XML. 10.2b, we added the pro data set support for serialization to and from JSON. Moving to release 11, we added much more support for external XML schemas that can map to pro data sets. We added the JSON OOADL API to the language. And in 11.4, that's the one that is under the disclaimer, we added four image support to the read and write JSON methods. So our agenda, first we're going to talk about XML and OpenEdge, and then JSON and OpenEdge, and then just a little bit about the differences between XML and JSON and how we've used them within the ABL. And then at the end, of course, questions and answers. So first, XML. Why is that important? It's been the industry standard for a long time, formatting for document and data exchange over the internet. Use cases, we use it for sending structured data over the internet. It's a backbone for our web services and SOAP support for both our web services client and our web services adapter. It's used for sharing data between third-party applications, such as personal reports. And it's also been used for persistent storage between ABL sessions, such as context management. You save away your XML, you close down the session, you bring it back up, and you can restore any context you want by leaving XML back in. So back in V9, we started with our DOM and our SAX support. The DOM is document object model. It's a W3 standard. You build up a DOM tree in memory. Your logic is to traverse the tree and build nodes in the tree. It's just a little example of creating an X document and doing a load from a file. We also added the SAX reader, which SAX stands for Simple API for XML. That's a de facto streaming standard. It's a stream-only methodology, and you get your data by using application callbacks, internal procedures, to get at your data and manipulate that. We added the SAX writer in 10.1a, which I'll talk a little bit more about that. So in 10.1a, we added the SAX writer, and what this helps you do is create well-formed XML. You can always do puts to put XML, you know, into a stream or into a file. You can always do that. But with the strict attribute on the SAX writer, you can force the strict XML and well-formed XML and make sure that as you're doing your start document, your start element, that it ends with an end document, end element, that everything's like properly nested. We also, in 10.1a, added XML schema validation to the language. Prior to that, we had DTD validation. So for the DOM support, you do the add schema location method to your X document, and then on your load method, you say true to the last argument saying you want to validate. The SAX reader, you set the schema location attribute to your namespace and your XSD file, and then you set validation in there to true to validate. So as you parse, it's going to validate that your XML is valid per any XML schema that you want to validate against. So DOM versus SAX, advantages, the DOM, it's always available in memory. You can do in-place updates of it. Disadvantages, it's memory intensive because the whole document gets loaded into memory. For a 1 megabyte file, it turns out to be 10 megabytes in memory. You know, it's a 1-to-10 ratio for that. With machines now that memory doesn't matter so much. It might not be a problem, but back in 9, it probably was more of a problem, not in 1999. So for SACS, it's much less memory intensive. You can stop the parse early, and you can access data from a bad document. When you load a document in the DOM and it's not valid or it's malformed, you can't go anywhere. For parse, you can streaming so you can get to where you might want to go. Disadvantage is it's forward only, and it does require that context management with the callbacks, meaning that you have to have internal procedures to get to your data, and that's a little bit less performant because we have to call back in to internal procedures from the AVM. So also in 10.1a, we added support for pro data sets and temp tables to and from XML. We added the write XML schema, read XML schema methods that apply to the pro data set, temp table buffer objects. We did this because we needed to make it easier to deal with XML. If an XML document can conform to a data set, it's easier to work with. In the 4GL, if you have a data set with records and temp tables, rather than using the DOM of SACS to try to get at things. One of the things in 10.1a, I don't know if anybody was Mary CK, one of our founders, it's like she was going to quit if we didn't do this. So we ended up actually doing it by 10.1a. So here's just the syntax for write XML and write XML schema. Write XML takes a target type. It can be a file, a stream, a mem pointer, a handle, or a long hair. You can say whether you want it to be formatted, meaning it's indented and line character and line feeders, line feeds. You can say what encoding you want. Schema location, you can put an XML schema location within the document. You can write XML schema with inline with the XML data, with write XML if you want. Min schema means we just want the standard XML schema. We have progress specific XML schema attributes that you can add. I'll show that a little bit later. We also added the write before image, so you can write before image data with your after table data. If you have a data set that's got before images, you can write both the after table data and the before image data in XML.
That was in 10.1a, write before image?
Yes. JSON is 10, it's 11.4.
Oh.
Yeah. We did that at the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
Mostly because .NET already support, we were kind of following what .NET was doing with the ADO.NET data set, so yeah. That was there at the beginning. And in 10.2a, we added omit initial values. That means that if your fields have the initial value, like it's a zero for an integer or the empty string for a character, we don't have to serialize that because when we read it back in, we know what it's going to be based on the initial value. You need to be careful about that when you're sending that XML to somebody else because they might not have that same type of schema. Write XML schema is just about the same. It's less options. The target type is the same, formatted, encoding, min schema, and initial values. So we added a bunch of attributes to allow you to give control over the XML format that you want. So everything that doesn't have parentheses or release in red, that means this is all added in 10.1a. So namespace URI, namespace prefix, that's on the pro dataset, temp table, and the buffer objects. That allows you to namespace qualify your arguments for whatever XML standards you need to conform to. XML node type is on the buffer field. You can say that I want my field to be represented as an element, an attribute. It can be a text node, or you can even say it's hidden, you know, in your XML document. XML data type, that's for when you want to transfer. There's so many XML schema data types, and we only have much limited, more progress data types. If you want to map a progress data type to a different type of XML schema type, you can specify that, and then we'll write that to the XML schema as the actual type. Nested is for the data relation. If you want your parent, like your customer record and your order records nested, whether you want your orders for a customer nested with each other, you specify that on the data relation. XML node name, we added in 10.1c. That's so that you can have a different pro data set temp table or buffer name different than what the actual name you want in the XML. Because XML schemas that you're getting from outside might say, I want a reserved keyword for my name, and that won't work. It won't compile. So that we gave that option. Foreign key hidden, it's a little bit like XML type hidden. That's when you have your customers and your orders nested within them, and the custom field is the relationship field. You don't really need that custom one because it's redundant. So that just helps do that for you. Serialized name and hidden, we're both adding intent to be, mostly for the JSON support, which I'm getting to, but that's, we put that back into XML as well. So you can use serialized name instead of XML no name if you want, so that will apply to both JSON and XML. Serialized hidden is another one, is XML no type. If you want XML no type hidden, you can say serialized hidden instead, and that will apply to both your JSON serialization and your XML serialization. So I'm going to go through a couple of examples of what the XML looks like. Here we're setting our relationship, the custor data relation, to nested true. So here you see the document, the data set's name is custorder, the parent table is customer, with custom and customer name fields, and nested within that are the order records. And that's what nested gets you when you say write XML. So here, if you go one step further and say foreign key hidden, what's going to happen is that those redundant custom fields will not be apparent in the XML serialization. What read XML will do for you, though, is it will populate those fields with the right values. We understand that the custom foreign key field is not there in the order record in the XML, so we go outside and look for the custom field in the customer table and populate that. That's something that .NET doesn't do. Last time I checked.
Can that be multiple component key? Of course.
Yeah. This is just simple, so I can make it better. So here's our write before image syntax. So here we came up with the root document is our ProDS dataset changes document. That's the root element of the document, specifying that it's got before image information. And here we're seeing the after table data. And here we're showing the ProDS row state is modified. That means the record was modified since tracking changes were turned on. And the key here is that ProDS ID attribute of TTCUS2593. And that's what's going to identify the after table record with the before table record. So when we read it back in, we can match up, we can build the Pro data set back up with the before image information. And down the bottom, this was a record that was created since tracking changes were turned on. So it's got the row state created. So here's the before image section. That it's the same document. I have to split up into two shots here. So here we have that same ProDS ID. So that's saying custom 2 was modified. And this is the before image data. So when we read that back in, we get the right after table data, we get the right before table data, and then you have your So XML schema extensions, I talked a little bit about that. So we can't specify everything that we can in a data set or a timetable definition with a standard XML schema. We have XSD type for the type, right? We have XSD, min occurs, max occurs, those are all XSD standards. So we added a pro data namespace to our extensions when you say min schema equals false, when you want the whole schema, so we can round trip a data set definition or a timetable definition. So we added that namespace. So here we see a few field level attributes, such as the label of your field, the format of your field, and it's a decimal, so that's the decimals attribute for the field. That's not something that we couldn't do with standard XML schema. And here in the app info section of our XML schema, we can identify non-unique index definitions. Unique indexes can be specified with standard XML schema XSD unique. But for non-unique, we added this annotation so that we can do a round trip with non-unique indexes. So read XML and read XML schema were both added as well to 10.1a. So read XML, it takes a source type of a file, name pointer, handle, or a long pair. The read mode, that's like the fill mode on the data set, empty, append, replace. Schema location, you can say where an external schema is in order if you want to validate this XML against an external XSD. Override default mapping and field type mapping have to do with all the different data types that mapped XML schema. Our default for an XSD string is a character. But if you want to be a plot, you want to override that mapping. So if a string comes in an XML schema, you want it to be a plot. And the binary as well, default is to a raw for a binary type, base64 binary or a hex binary. And if you want it to be a blob, then you do the override map. And field type mapping, you can get a field by field, you know, difference between what you want. So ReadXML recognizes the full four image format. It just knows automatically that its data set changes. It also can recognize the Microsoft's diffgram format to populate a pro data set with Microsoft format. We actually tried back in 10.1a to get Microsoft to allow us to use their diffgram format in our serialization, but they said no. So we had to come up with our own proprietary. And we can also infer schema from XML data. What that means is we can just take an XML document, read it into an empty data set or temp table, and be able to figure out what the definition is, and then pull the data in and populate the records. ReadXML schema is similar with the source type, override default mapping, field type mapping. Verify schema mode, I didn't get to this. There's a strict and there's a loose. Strict means everything has to match up one for the schema and the data. Loose means if the thing's missing from one or the other, that's okay, we let it go by. You know, and none is like, we don't want to verify at all. So ReadXML schema and ReadXML with the schema location attribute. It does recognize non-progress XML schema formats. We do a lot with recognizing non-progress XML schemas and bringing them into data sets because it's all kind of the same, different formats, different layouts. We do create a data set when we can. We can't always do that because it just won't fit. We did more work in 11, that's going to be in a couple more slides. But when we read XML schema from a non-progress schema, we do try to create a data set for you.
Create a data set, you mean dynamically, right?
Utility we added for this was XSD with 4GL. It takes an XML schema definition file and creates a .i with a data set definition. If it happens to be an XML schema against a progress temp table, we'll create a temp table definition for it. And in 10.1a, we've had the Wizzle Analyzer since I think 10.0 with the Web Services client, where we take in a Wizzle document and try to map all our methods and parameters. So now that we have this XSD4GL utility, we can take in more complex types and actually map them to data set parameters. So in 11.0, we did a lot of work with recognizing more XML schema as data sets. We got a lot of use cases from customers saying, okay, why isn't this a data set? And mostly it was because there were those nested relationships, but they weren't specific. There weren't mappings between fields. There wasn't an XML schema mapping between the fields. And I said, well, I really want to still be able to use this in the data set and not have to use DOM or SAS for it. So what we did was we came up with a new relationship other than the data relation, a parent ID relation. And what that is, the child records of the child table that's nested, the record ID is in, the record ID of the parent is actually located in the child record so that we can map them back together. And we also added a parent fields before after attribute so that when you have a parent child where the child is actually in the middle of some of the fields of the parent, we can say, okay, these parents get serialized before the child and these parents get serialized after the child. It's all about the nested. So we've added support for that in ReadXML, ReadXML schema, as well as the XSD to 4GL utility and the Wizzle.doc utility that I just talked about. And with this parent ID relation, ReadXML just knows the right thing to do. It knows how to serialize these relationships, just like it does a regular nested data relation. So here's an example of the parent ID relation. Here on the root node is the customer orders data set. And there's two buffers, the customer buffer in blue and a nested order buffer in orange. It's a little contrived because it's customer order and you think custom will be there, but it just made it easy for an example. So we don't have an explicit relationship between customer and order. So we take this XML or an XML schema representing this XML through XSD4GL or read XML schema. This is the definition we come up with. It's a temp table customer with the two fields, custom name, an order temp table with order num and order toe. And this is where we add that customer underscore ID field as type rec ID. And we say it's XML node type hidden. It could be serialized hidden if you wanted to write it yourself so that we know not to write it out to the XML. And so the data set definition has that parent ID relation for customer and order, and the parent ID field identifies that customer underscore ID field as the key, the link between the child and the parent.
But once you create that XML, you would never be able to read it and be able to determine that relationship.
Of course you could. Because as we're reading it in, we create the customer record. So we know, at that point, we know the record ID.
Okay, that's
then we read it in, then we it, yeah, it's like foreign key hidden a little bit, but it's like, it's a rec ID.
Okay.
Yeah. We know the relationship at that point.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
when we do that. Yeah.
So is that what you guys do in the background when there's not definite relationships connected to the rec IDs of the parent?
Yeah, when we can't get an explicit relationship from an XML schema, this is what we do. This is all based on customers with use cases, like we went through like three different customers and they all had similar use cases. So here's an example with the parent fields. After, it's the same as before, except you see the custom and the name fields are after the order record. Okay, so the definition would be exactly the same, except at the bottom there on the right, the parent field after would be custom name. And then we'd know, as we're serializing, okay, get to the customer record. Oh, we don't have any parent fields before, so serialize all the order records and then serialize the customer fields after. And again, this just came from use cases from the people who like wanting to deal with external XML schemas. Another use case that we found in 11.0 was that when a root node maps to a temp table, there are a lot of XML documents where the root node maps to a temp table because there's actually a field definition. So here we have a person temp table with a name field. And then we have a nested children temp table, which has no fields. We have to make up something in there to get down to the child temp table, which has the children of Ken Lohner, both of his children. You know who he is. So here, what we do here in this example with XML schema or inferring XML, we define the data set person DSET, all right, with XML null type hidden, or serialized hidden would work as well if you wanted to. And that's for the person table, the children table, and the child table. Okay, so that's it for XML. Let's move on to JSON. So why is JSON important? JSON stands for JavaScript Object Notation. You all have heard about that, you know, with the acquisition and Node.js and all that, we all kind of understand. JSON is coming up more in the forefront than XML about a lightweight data exchange format. It's used a lot more in web development. If you use JavaScript or Perl or Ruby, you can read the JSON in and it just naturally goes into their native data types. So with this, you could use the app server web speed to become a back end of a rich internet application. Also in 11.2, that's what we supported for the rest of the app serialization and for OE mobile. We send JSON over the wire as the capability. And it's also good for persistent storage between ABL applications. It's less verbose than XML. We found, like we're testing, that a data set in JSON is about one third smaller than the same data set in XML, because you don't need all the tags, you know, because of the syntax.
Does that proportion exponentially grow with the size of the data set? Because I think I did some testing around that. It kind of.
We can talk about that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's thinking it might grow with the size of the data set.
Yeah,
it could. I didn't do a whole lot of testing, but it is smaller, because you don't need the beginning end tags. We'll look at the syntax for JSON in a minute, but you just don't need as much like text.
I think what happened for me is I was disappointed at how what the ratio was, XML versus JSON, but as my data grew, I'm pretty sure that the ratio grew with it.
The ratio wasn't as good as the data set grew?
I was disappointed in the ratio from the beginning, but as my data sets were bigger, it seemed to be more efficient, and I don't know why, and I may be making that up, but that was my
impression.
I might be wrong with you the first time.
No, it is smaller just because we'll look at what the syntax is, but yeah, it your mileage will vary depending on what you're doing. Sure. We support format. The talking about is like formatted and unformatted XML and JSON and the sizes. Of course, when you're sending something over the wire, you're going to want to do unformatted because you don't need the readability of the character term line feeds into anything. And it's the same with JSON as well. We add white space as well with JSON. So for JSON, there's like four basic data types for JSON. There's the string, which is enclosed in quotes. We have a number, which can represent an integer, a decimal, even scientific notation. The Boolean data type in JSON represents our logical, which is true or false. And we also have the notion of a null data type, which isn't kind of a data type to us, it's the unknown, but it's kind of a data type when you talk in JSON. So for the non-standard data types, for our date time data types, we've gone with what's commonly used, the ISO 8601 format, which is what XML Schema uses for serialization. And for our binary data types, the raw and the blob, we chose the BASIC 64 binary protocol. We also support the complex data types of object and array. And that's where our timetables and data sets are really those, but I'll get into a little bit more of that when I talk about the API. So 10.2b, the write JSON and the read JSON methods. So write JSON, we can send JSON to a file, stream, a stream handle, a mem pointer, or a long care. We can specify whether we want to format it, just like SML with the character turn line feeds and the nice indenting, so it's more readable if you want to open a file and look at it. Encoding, we support all the UTF encodings for write JSON. Omit initial values that you saw in XML, where you know an integer of zero, we don't have to write it out because we know how to read it back in. Omit auto object is something that we added in 11.0. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And 11.4, we added the write before image support for JSON.
About time.
Yeah, we did that under the cover. We do it under the covers for mobile, and it was part of the offline support for mobile, and that was the impetus for us actually getting it done in this release. So, yeah. No, it was about time, we agree. So read JSON, what we added to that was for the source type, you can have a JSON array or a JSON object, which are the OOADL API objects that I'm going to talk to about in a few minutes. So JSON attributes, this looks similar to what I said for XML, except without the XML specifics to it. The nested, foreign key hidden, serialized name, serialized hidden, and parent ID relation. They're all supported with JSON as well as they are from XML. So here's a similar example in JSON. Here's a nested data set. We have the object, custom order. The data set is an object. The customer is the table that's an array, and it shows that it's a row, it's an object of the row, and nested is the order, record is nested, which is an array as well, is nested within the customer record, or customer one. So when you add foreign key hidden, you lose the custom because it's redundant when you're nested, same as it is with XML. So omit outer object, that's a new option we added to write JSON in 11.0. False, because people found that the name of the temp table or the data set wasn't really necessary. So to make a well-formed JSON object or JSON array. So we allowed the option to omit that so other applications could read it more easily. So here on the left with omit outer object false, the TT is there, that's the name of the temp table, and then you have the three row objects. And omit outer object true, you lose the outer object and you just have an array with the three rows.
What's the default?
False. We're almost always false for logicals. Yeah. Yeah. So here's our before image syntax for JSON. It's a little bit different. If you remember with the XML, we had that outer Proteus dataset changes root element when we were working with the mobile group in designing this format, because it was mostly for them and for the ABL. We decided to keep the outer object the name of the dataset, and we just add a property, Proteus has changes, that signifies this as being an object with before image data. And a little bit like the XML, we have a modified record here, and the property ProDSID is what's going to identify it with the record in the before table. And here, again, we have a created record. It's just marked with the work state of created. So here's the before section in the same XML JSON string. Here we have a deleted record. So that deleted records don't show up in the after table, they show up in the before table, and we mark it as the row state deleted. And here's that modified record for custom 2, and that Proteus ID which ties it back in to the after table. Yes,
ma'am? Is this a pretty standard format outside of the progress group for JSON in regards to the before image?
I'm not sure that we knew of any standard before imaging format. I don't think .NET had it. When we did the XML, we had that kind of to go by. But we used the same attributes that we did in XML to be properties in JSON. So
in the JavaScript world, we would have to be responsible for making sure we formatted it correctly.
Right. And the JSDO definitely does that. Who knows how to do that? Yeah. So we also support inferring schema from JSON like we do with XML. It's a little bit more sophisticated because the JSON has those intrinsic types, you know, the string, the number, the boolean, and the null. So we can do a little bit more with XML if you infer everything's a character because we don't know any better. If we can infer from the type of the data, whether it's a character, a decimal, or a logical. And for now, we look at all the records, and if everything's null, it's a character. Otherwise, we pick whichever, one. If there was a non-null field in a different record, we pick that data type. And we can also infer nested data relationships, just like with read XML, including paramagnetic relations.
Do you ever infer that a number is an integer, or do you always assign it to a decimal?
We always assign it to decimal because that's what we do.
Yeah.
We actually, Peter Judge, you probably know him, Peter Judge, he does a lot of the bytes. He wants it to be an int when it's an int, when everything's an int. Yeah. We do have a byte in our queue about that. Okay. To be a little bit smarter about when it's a number, whether it's a decimal or an integer.
Yeah.
We did decimal because it's safe, because it's bigger. And also we add in 11.0 the serialized row method on a buffer object. We've been asked since 10.1a, okay, I'm doing buffer write XML, why are you sending me writing the whole temp table? It's on a buffer. And that's what we decided to do, write the whole temp table. So we added the serialized row method so that it only serializes the current row of the temp table. And it's supported in both JSON and XML. And the difference between this and the write JSON method is just that there's the target format, the first argument says I want JSON or XML. Also in 11.0, we added built-in OOABL classes to support a JSON API. The main JSON constructs are the object and the array. So the first one I'm talking about here is the progress.json.objectmodel.jsonobject. A JSON object is a collection of named value pairs. There's no order specified. You get at a property within an object by name. And the object is surrounded by curly braces, as you see at the bottom. And the JSON object is not final, so you can inherit from it and extend it to make it a user-defined class to do with whatever you want. So here's just a simple example of working with a JSON object. First, you new the JSON object. You add a property called name, and its value is Dorothy Gale, so that becomes a character. You also add a property called age with a value of 38. That becomes an integer. And you add another object, region, which is another string, Kansas, USA. And then we write to a lawn care with formatting on. So this is what you'd see in your lawn care if you exported it. So you, like I said, you get at these properties by name. So you do my object, get character of name, and that's going to return Dorothy Gale. You do my object colon get integer of age, and it'll get at the age property and return an integer 38. We do have some checking here, so you couldn't do a get character on the age property because it's an integer. That's going to return you an error. So you have to kind of know your data types. You can always get string to get, you know, get everything, but if you want to get something into a native data type, you have to kind of know the data type for what you're working on. So the second major construct in JSON is the JSON array. A JSON array is an ordered list of unnamed values. It has a strict order, unlike the object. You access it by the array index, and a JSON array is surrounded by the square brackets, as you see at the bottom. And again, you can inherit from this and make your own user-defined classes and extend them any way you want. So an example of a JSON array, you knew the JSON array. You add a 1, that's going to add an integer. You add false, that's going to add a logical of false. You add a string jump rope, that's going to add a character. And then you add a null. And then you write to lawn care, and that's what you're going to see. So here, what you can do is you can set the second element, which is a logical false, to 6.0. That's going to change the data type of that array element from a logical to a decimal. So then you do a get decimal of number of the second element, you get a 6.0, and you do a get logical of 4, and you're going to get the unknown value. And we also support combination of simple values of objects and arrays. You know, our data sets and our timetable are kind of combinations that way as well. So here we have an object with two properties, sales rep and tractor sales. The sales rep has three simple properties of name, which is string, age, and region. And the tractor sales property is an object which consists of three arrays, 2009, 2008, and 2007 quarter. So with the JSON API, you can mix and match, add whatever you need to suit your needs. We also added more pro data set and timetable support with our JSON API. So with the JSON object read, you can read a data set, a timetable, or a timetable buffer into it. For JSON array read method, you can add a timetable into it. And we also added two read JSON, two new object types for the source, the JSON object, and the JSON array.
And these are dynamic also?
Hmm?
No, they could be dynamic, they're dynamic buffers.
Right. In the end, when you get down to it, it's always when you say data set, handle, colon. When you're calling the methods, you send it the handle, whether it's static or dynamic, to all those methods. Yeah. So that's it for JSON. A couple of slides on XML versus JSON. XML pages where it's extensible. We do have formal XML schema support, which we don't have for JSON. We do interrupt much better with data sets, ADO.net data sets, when they're serialized as XML with a diffgram format, four-image format. Disadvantage for XML, it's more verbose than JSON because you have those beginning and end tags. It can be memory intensive. Read XML does use the DOM under the covers to build up the data set, so you have those memory issues like you do with the DOM. For JSON, it's lighter weight than XML because you don't have as much tags and everything for it. But one of the big things is with web development is it's easily consumed by JavaScript. The data that comes in can map directly natively to a data type within your application. And it's also the preferred method for RESTful web services at this point, at least that's what Google told me. We do the REST adapter 11.2 currently just supports JSON, but I think they're going to move to supporting XML, you know, at some future time. Disadvantage, you don't have the XML schema support that you get, but if you need it, if you don't need it, you don't need it. There is a notion of JSON schema. It's not as formalized as XML schema. We haven't really looked into it yet about adding it into the ABL. We know that some of our mobile developers used that when they were designing the JSDO format, the catalog format for mobile and JSDOs. And it's a little bit harder to deal with that binary data because it's not quite as flexible for those four data types. So based on consider the consumer of your data, you kind of know what you're going to be dealing with and who's giving it to you and who you need to send it to, so you have to make those trade-offs. And this is just a few quotes that I got when I was doing Google from two websites. So they're both simple, they're text-based, JSON and XML. They both use Unicode. And they allow generic tools to manipulate the data. From the bottom two quotes from JSON.org, JSON is better for data exchange, it's simpler and lightweight. If you want to exchange documents, then you use XML, because that's what it's about for. And like I said, with JavaScript and all that, JSON can be more easily consumed, you know, in the JavaScript world and object-oriented systems.
Yes? I have a quick question.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
What do you mean with, like, serialization? It might be a dumb question, but I don't really understand what serializing is.
Serializing? That means just sending your object or your temp table to any other format. You can send it to a file, you can send it to a stream, you can write to a monitor. It's just the way we look at the object and we just serialize. We send the text base. What you saw in my examples of what the XML looked like and what the JSON looked like, that's what serialization is. So if you wrote it to a file and then you pull that up in Notepad or WordPad, that's what you see. That's what serialization is. It's got all kinds of different terms. It's just a way to take an object and send it somewhere to some other form.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sometimes we get XML documents that they use an LT semicolon and GT semicolon for the tags instead of the less than or greater than.
Right.
Is there any way to handle that?
No, that's just standard XML. You need to escape that or things are going to get really confused. Yeah.
Right now, we just go through and search for the
place,
but I just wonder if there's a way
to... No, that's just a standard, and the apostrophe and all that. Those are just, yeah, that's standard XML that you need to escape those things. Or, yeah, you get into trouble. Okay.
Is there a read equivalent of serialized row?
Buffer equivalent, read JSON on each. A read equivalent of serialized row. So read JSON and read XML will read the equivalent. So there's just one record.
Right.
So it just gives you one record. The serialized row is a convenience so that you wouldn't have to, if you just want the one record sent with XML or JSON, that would just send that one row and not the entire temp table.
Right.
So buffer, colon, or even temp table, colon, read JSON or read XML can handle that perfectly.
Does it have controls if there's already stuff in the temp table?
Yep, there's the append mode.
Okay.
Yeah, you append and replace all those temp modes. Yes,
so you're saying that the
serialized row is basically just a row level equivalent to the right XML or right JSON.
Right, yeah.
Output that format, but just that.
Same exact format, but just one
row. Yeah, I was thinking it was like, when I hear serialized, I think of like the stringify and parse, like switching between in JavaScript.
No.
Put more quotes and...
No, we got asked way back when, why does buffer write XML write the whole time table? Because it's on the buffer up. Yeah, so we did add that. The serialized one was just a convenience. And the read part is all the same.
Now, right now, I mean, it is, the working with JSON and such and having it loaded, is that just available as a function of the data sets, or is there like a, DOM equivalent where you just loaded a JSON data? I mean, one of the nice things about the JSON is that if you're in JavaScript, you can load it into a variable, and then you can use that information as an object. It's basically an object representation. You can do it with your DOM all over the place. Mm-hmm. Is there anything available right now, or plans to be available, or you could... I mean, I guess data sets give you that, but it, I guess...
Data sets give you that for the read XML. No, but for the JSON API, the old ABL, that's exactly what it's for.
Okay.
I didn't go into enough detail about that. There's just so much that we added. Go to the Working with JSON book. No, you can read, you can do all kinds of stuff.
Okay,
like that.
So you can read it in without it being attached to a data set?
Absolutely not. No, that's what the JSON API is all about.
The easiest way is like, it's a JSON object model parser, and then has it like web context handle, so you can take like there's your whole object right there.
Yeah, the web context thing I didn't have time to get into, but that's it. Working with JSON, go see that. It's got a lot of great stuff.